The Secret Room by Cynthia Mercati. Chapter 1. A Minister's Daughter. Sometimes it's hard to be the daughter of a minister. We call a minister a dominé in Holland. People expect you to be quiet in church and extra smart in school. They also think you should be good and polite all the time. I'm just not made that way. First of all, I have a terrible time keeping quiet anywhere. I just have to say what I'm thinking, even if it gets me in trouble, which it usually does. Secondly, I'm not very good at my studies. I'm okay at history, but as for math and science, I'm hopeless. I only get through them because my best friend, Leah, helps me with my homework. And lastly, I'm not very well behaved. Just ask my mother. She says that sometimes I shout so much I give her a headache. She also says that I never walk when I can run, that my room is always messy, and that my hair is never brushed. And Mama's right. The world is such an exciting place. There's so much I want to see and do that it seems silly to waste all that time on being neat. Mama often says, if only you could be more like Siri. Siri is my older sister. She has blonde hair as smooth and shiny as silk, and her eyes are as blue as our Dutch sky on a cloudless day. My hair, on the other hand, is dishwater blonde, and my eyes are much more gray than blue. Siri's blouses are always tucked neatly into her pleated skirts, and her collars and cuffs are always white and shining. My shirt tails are always hanging out. The hems on my skirts are always unraveling, and my shoes are usually scuffed. Siri has a gentle smile and a very ladylike way of walking and talking. She sings in the church choir and makes the best grades in her high school. And when people in Papa's church are sick, Siri's the first one to visit them. When she isn't helping Mama in the kitchen or out doing good deeds, Siri's doing needlework. People are forever saying, Siri's handiwork is prettier than anything you can buy in the shops. Mama tried to teach me the delicate sewing that Siri's so good at, once. My hands just don't work that way. And besides, I can't sit still that long. I always seem to have a case of the fidgets. At church, school, or home, I always have to be on the move. A young lady should learn to sit quietly, Mama is forever telling me. But Papa sticks up for me. Leave Annie be, he'll say. She has energy to burn, and that's a good thing. He always smiles at me then. He takes the pipe from his mouth, and he uses it to make a little swooshing gesture toward the door, saying, Run outside, Annie, and see the world. I always laugh when Papa says that, but Mama just shakes her head and makes a clucking sound. And as I run out the door, she usually makes a remark about my manners, too, or lack of them. One time I heard her say, Whatever will become of that child? The teachers say she rushes around all the time in school, too. That's why she doesn't do as well as Siri. She's not Siri, Papa answered patiently, and I could have kissed him for his answer, except I was supposed to be off playing and not eavesdropping. Unfortunately, I eavesdrop a lot. Snooping, Mama calls it. That's how I happened to hear her say, Annie's never going to find a husband. What with the way she behaves and looks so untidy? And then what will she do? My cheeks burned scarlet at Mama's words. Is that what it took to find a husband, I thought? Being neat and walking with prim little steps? If it did, then I definitely didn't want one. Maybe Annie will do something besides get married, Papa said. Like what? Mama demanded. I'd been crouched on the landing listening, and now I ran into the living room. The words burst out of me. There are all kinds of things I could do, I exclaimed. Maybe I'll own a boat and be an explorer. Don't be ridiculous, Mama said. She didn't even look up from her darning. Girls don't do things like that. Then I'll be the first, I insisted. Remember at summer camp last year? I won 3 medals for sailing. I wasn't very happy with that camp, Mama said. They should have been teaching you useful things, like cooking and sewing. I think Annie should become a spy, Papa said with a sly smile. She seems to be very good at overhearing things she shouldn't. Mama only clucked her tongue at Papa's obvious joke, but her unspoken words hung heavily in the room, like they seemed to hang over everything I did. If only you could be more like your sister. Yes, it's hard enough being a minister's daughter, without having to be the sister of an angel, too. Our family lives in a little town very close to Amsterdam, the biggest city in Holland. But then, Holland is so small, no place is very far away from any other place. I sometimes think that in the whole universe, our little Holland must be no more than a dot. Three rivers run right through all of Holland. They're all on their way to the North Sea, the Rhine, the Waal, and the Maas. Those rivers connect with other smaller rivers, and they all connect up with the canals that crisscross our country, as straight and narrow as rulers. A canal runs right through the center of our little town. I love to watch the boats pass by, and I love the water. I love its changing colors and its fresh, crisp scent. I love how you can swim in it and fish during the summer, and how in the winter you can skate on its frozen silver surface. After camp, I tried to tell my family how wonderful it had been to be on the water every day, and to think that by following the canals and the rivers, you could find your way to the sea. From there, you could go anywhere, even as far as America. Now it's time to find your way to the sink and the dishes, Mama had replied, cutting off my words in midstream, just as she always did. I stood up, scraping my chair against the floor with more energy than was needed. I marched over to the sink. My mind was in a blaze of rebellion. How could Mama be like that? Maybe she was happy going no farther than the end of her nose, but I wanted adventure. Someday I was going to see the whole world. But right now I have to be happy just exploring our little town. I usually do that with Leia. Leia and I are in the 7th grade. We've been best friends since we can remember. Sometimes the two of us walk far into the country, and when we do, I like to lie back in the long grass and just stare up at the sky. At times I feel like the very blue of the sky, the very gold of the sun, and the very scent of the wind are all inside me, and I'm a part of everything, earth, wind, and water. Once, I told Leia, I wished I could just bottle up the moment and my feelings. That way I could carry them with me always. You can, Leia had said. Your memories are always with you. That's why Leia's my best friend. She always understands. There really aren't any unknown places in our little town to search out. No caves or woods. Like the rest of Holland, we're a flat, marshy kind of place. Nothing but land and canals, stretching out in all directions. So Leia and I just pretend we're somewhere else, running down the banks of the Amazon, or climbing Mount Everest, or scaling the pyramids. There are good things about Holland, too, like the water and the trees. Our trees are all up and down the canals, lindens and elms, chestnut and cherry trees. We have plenty of birds, too. Swans on the canal, ducks in the river, sparrows on the roof. And the seagulls are everywhere. They swoop down and hover over the water, then they take off again. I told Siri once that I thought it would be wonderful to fly, like a seagull. I think it would be frightening, she said. But wouldn't you like to go places you've never been? I asked. Then I whirled around the room. Someday, Leia and I are going to go to every exciting place in the world. Names I knew only from maps rolled off my tongue. To Zanzibar and Morocco and Timbuktu. I like it here, Siri had said quietly. I guess I'm just a homebody, Annie. Our village rises up on both sides of the canal. All of the houses are very much alike, tall and narrow, and made of good Dutch brick. Our houses are always clean, and I mean always. Dutch housewives pride themselves on their cleanliness, but Mama goes a step past that, I think. She and Siri are always cleaning or polishing something. We have a busy house, too. It's right next door to Papa's church, and people are always stopping in. Happy people who want to talk about weddings or baptisms. Sad people who want to talk about funerals. People with big problems and small ones. They all want a kind listener and a bit of advice. Papa's often late for dinner because he's been visiting people that are too old or ill to come to church. Sometimes people who don't even know us come calling at our house, but they've been told how kind Papa is and that he never turns anyone away. And he doesn't. If people need food, that's what they get. If they need money, Papa arranges for them to talk to someone about getting jobs. He insists that the soup kettle and the coffee pot always be on. That way, the people who drop in will feel like they're welcome. I'm glad I have Papa. And I'm glad, too, that he loves me, because I seem to spend a lot of time feeling like I should be more like Siri and less like me. It bothers me sometimes at night when I lie in bed. I wish that people would make comments about me, like they do about my sister. Her hair is like spun gold. That's what people are always saying about Siri. Or, look, her eyes are the color of blue china. All people ever say to me is, comb your hair. Don't talk so much. Don't run so fast. Careful, you're going to knock that over. Sometimes I complain to Papa. I seem to get into an awful lot of trouble, I tell him. He always answers the same way. You're just as you should be, Annie, he says. You were made the way you are for a reason. I can't imagine what that reason might be, but maybe someday I'll find out. In the meantime, I ride my bike. I have small adventures with Leia and pretend they're big ones. And like everyone else in Holland, I try not to worry about what Germany might be up to. All started when Hitler was elected Chancellor of Germany. He took what used to be a perfectly nice country and turned it into a bad one. Then he ordered his soldiers to march into Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Austria and take them over, too. England and France have declared war on Germany. Maybe they'll be able to keep Hitler in his place, but it doesn't look good. In fact, Papa has told us Germany is winning the war. When I think of Hitler and his German Reich, I get angry and scared. So I try not to think about him. But he's getting harder and harder to ignore. He's gobbling up more and more countries, and Germany is Holland's next-door neighbor. Chapter 2. The Invasion. I sat bolt upright in bed. A brilliant flash lit up the night. Then another. The sky outside my window was glowing red. An explosion shook the bed. I could feel the house swaying around me. Plaster dust fell from the ceiling. There was another explosion. This one sounded louder and closer than the first. The door burst open, and Mama and Siri rushed into the room. Mama's hair was sticking out wildly in all directions. Her robe was half on and half off. Never before had I seen my mother when she wasn't perfectly tidy. Siri's silken hair was swinging loose, and her nightgown was swirling around her slender frame. We huddled together on my bed. "What's going to happen to us?" Mama cried. She grabbed Siri's hand in mine. "What will become of us?" There was another explosion, so loud it seemed as if the house would shake right off its foundation. Mama buried her head in her hands. Siri and I tried to comfort her. She started sobbing. "Why don't they stop? I can't stand it." Papa appeared at the doorway. He wore a robe over his pajamas and still held his pipe in his hand. Mama threw herself against him. "Peter, I'm so scared. Make it stop," she screamed. Papa patted Mama's back, making little hushing noises. "It's the Germans," he said. "It just came over the radio. They've invaded Holland. They're bombing Amsterdam." Siri and I ran to Papa, and all three of us clung to him. We were like drowning people, and he was our life preserver. "We have to get downstairs," he commanded as the explosions became even louder. "It's safer there."
As if to prove the truth of his words, the force of the next explosion broke the window. Glass flew everywhere. I screamed and fell to my knees as glass and wood hurtled through the air. Papa pushed Siri and Mama to the floor.
"What will become of us?"
Mama moaned again and again.
"Downstairs!" Papa yelled.
I crawled into the hallway and Siri followed me, but Mama was rocking back and forth on her knees, her arms folded around her middle. It made me feel a little strange to see my strong, sure mother like a helpless child. But Papa put one arm around her waist, one hand under her arm, and pulled her to her feet. As he urged her down the stairs, I could still hear her wounded words, "What will become of us?" When we reached the first floor, Papa gathered us in the center of the living room. He made sure we were as far away from the windows as possible. Papa turned on the radio. The announcer's voice cut in and out.
"Holland is at war,"
the voice crackled.
"Germany is trying to conquer our country, but the Dutch army is fighting back bravely."
Our soldiers were brave, but still our army was small, and they were going up against the greatest war machine in the world. All of us had watched the newsreels that showed thousands and thousands of Nazi soldiers parading in front of Hitler, and he stood on the reviewing stand, his arm raised in a salute. Behind the soldiers had come the tanks and trucks, while the fighter planes flew overhead. The Nazis had so many weapons, so much power. The static got so bad we couldn't hear a word the announcer was saying. Then Papa turned the radio off. Outside, the world was an eerie color, filled with fire and smoke. The explosions mixed with the rapid rhythm of machine guns. Surely there could be nothing left standing in Amsterdam by now. Siri's face was dead white, lit by the explosions. Mama looked frozen. Her eyes were wide and staring at nothing. Or maybe she was seeing the end of her world. I clutched at Papa's arm.
"There must be something we can do," I said, "instead of just huddling here like frightened sheep."
In spite of his own worry and fear, Papa gave me a smile.
"You're very practical, Annie, and you are right. There is always something to be done, and what we must do now is pray," he said.
He got on his knees. Siri and I did the same. Gently, Papa helped Mama onto her knees. We all folded our hands and bowed our heads.
"We must pray for our country," he said, "and her people, and our soldiers."
Brave little Holland held out against Germany for 5 days. During those days, our home was crowded with people. They were crying, praying, and asking Papa what he thought would happen. What they wanted to hear, of course, was that we had defeated the Germans and the war was over. But not even Papa could give them that miracle. No one went to school or work, and Mama kept Siri and me busy feeding our visitors. Mama said my fingers were just too clumsy to do any of the cooking or baking. Maybe I couldn't do much damage as a server. And I didn't. Well, not much damage. After I dropped the second tray, Mama gave me another job. One morning, a heavy roaring in the sky woke us all up. I was sleeping with Siri now, and quickly I jumped out of bed and looked out the window. Row after row of airplanes were flying so low, it seemed as if they'd crash into the rooftops. Siri came to stand behind me. Suddenly, the blue of the sky was dotted with what looked like giant snowflakes.
"Siri," I whispered, "those are parachutes."
"Thousands of German soldiers are parachuting into Holland." It really was hopeless. The next thing we heard on the radio was that the Queen and the rest of the Dutch royal family had escaped to England. And then we heard the news of the surrender. The German occupation forces entered our town. Our first order came from a Nazi shouting through a big bullhorn. We were to gather in the town square to watch them. There we all stood, no one smiling, as the soldiers marched by. As they marched, they sang a German song of triumph. "Lift the banners high!" Right through our town square they came, right where we bought our vegetables and our tulips and roses. Down our main street they came, their guns over their shoulders, swinging their outstretched legs high in the air. Goose-stepping, that's what we called the way the Nazis marched. I felt as if I couldn't stand one more minute of their singing, or the mocking sound of their boots striking the pavement, my eyes stung with tears of fury. And then I did it. I deliberately turned my back on the square.
"Annie!" Mama gasped in alarm. "What are you doing? Do you want to get us all in trouble?"
She put her hand on my shoulder, trying to turn me, but I duck in my heels.
"Turn around right now," Mama hissed,
but I shook my head. "They can make me stand here," I thought, "but they can't make me watch. No one can, not even Mr. Hitler himself." When we returned to the house, I stood rebelliously in the front yard. I was thinking about the Germans and the world, and how wrong everything was. Mama and Siri had already gone into the house. Not even Hitler could keep Mama from her housework. I stared up at the wild cherry tree. There were only a few flowers left. Its fallen petals formed a carpet of white under my feet. Beside me, Papa picked off one of the few blossoms that still clung to the tree. He held it in the palm of his hand and looked at it. "It's amazing, isn't it, how this little flower has hung on through wind and rain and bombs. Nothing could shake it loose," he said and looked at me. "That's how we must be now. No matter what happens, we can't give up." Papa placed the flower in my hand. "Keep it, Annie, to remember this day," he said. I looked at him puzzled.
"To remember the day the Nazis marched into our town?" I asked.
Papa shook his head. "No, of course not," he said. He gently closed my fingers around the petals. "Ever since Hitler came to power in Germany, we've lived in fear of him. But now a new day has started. Now we can start to hope and begin to fight against him. That's what I want you to remember." Papa turned and walked up the steps into the house. Just then a bird landed in the cherry tree and began singing at the top of its lungs. "The Germans can't silence our birds," I thought, "and maybe they won't be able to silence us either." I started into the house, my hand clenched carefully around the white flower of hope. Chapter 3. The Yellow Star.
"This is what I want to say. Nazis, Nazis, go away. Herr Hitler's a big fat swine. You can have the rope next time."
"Annie Van Fries,"
the teacher grabbed the jump rope out of my hands,
"have you gone crazy singing that song?"
"It's just to keep time when we jump rope," I answered. Mrs. Van Kooten lifted her head. She squared her shoulders as if coming to attention.
"The Nazis are our conquerors. We must respect them," she scolded. "We must not sing or say bad things about them. Ever."
She raised one eyebrow and glared at me. "Do you understand?" I could barely make myself say the words, "Yes, Mrs. Van Kooten."
"Very good, then," Mrs. Van Kooten said. Her voice was crisp. "I will keep your jump rope until tomorrow, so I'm sure you've learned your lesson."
She darted a quick look at Leah. "And one more thing. You and Leah will no longer be desk partners," she said. Quickly, I opened my mouth to protest, but Mrs. Van Kooten cut me off. "The Nazis have ordered us to separate the Jewish children from the Christian children," she said. Then she paused and bit her lip. For a moment, it looked like she was sorry, as if maybe her manner and her words were all an act, just in case she was being watched by one of the Nazi soldiers who patrolled our streets. But then Mrs. Van Kooten snapped back to attention. "After recess, Leah, take your books and papers to the back of the room. That is where the Jewish students will sit from now on," she instructed. Mrs. Van Kooten marched back into the school. She slapped my jump rope sharply against her palm as she went. I looked at Leah. Her head was down and her lips trembled.
"How dare the Nazis treat her like this? It's not fair," I said.
My voice was low and thick with anger.
"It's not right, but it doesn't mean anything. We can still be best friends," I said.
Leah looked up. Her brown eyes were brimming with tears.
"It's just going to get worse and worse for the Jews," she said, just like in Germany. The Nazis made all these rules and laws about Jews. They made their lives horrible. And that's what's going to happen here.
Leah dashed away the tears that spilled down her cheeks with the back of one hand.
You don't understand how it feels to be Jewish, Annie. You can't, she cried. There's no safe place in the world for us.
And with that, Leah started running, across the playground and down the street, farther and farther, until she disappeared from sight, running like a wild thing, as if trying to escape from the future that waited for her. I didn't know if she was right, that in the whole world no place was safe for her, but I knew she was right about Holland. The Nazis were making it very clear just what they had in mind for the Jews.
The first thing I started noticing were the signs. Joden verboden, that's what they said. Jews forbidden. And they were posted all over, in restaurants, stores, the ice cream parlor, and the one movie theater in our village. Jews, it seemed, were no longer allowed to go anywhere. I was with Papa when we saw the big banner the Nazis had put up in the village square. It proclaimed all kinds of new rules. Before the war, Papa and I had taken lots of walks together. We always stopped for an ice cream cone or a soda when the weather was warm, or a steaming mug of hot chocolate when it was cold. But now Papa was busier than ever, and when he was home, he was often shut away in his study, talking with people I didn't know. Once, when I walked by his closed study door, I wasn't exactly snooping. I could hear Papa and his friends talking in hushed voices, and I wondered what was so secret that they had to speak in whispers, even behind a closed door. On this day, Papa and I were walking and talking, not about anything big or important, just about the little things I loved to share with him. Then, on a lamppost, in the middle of the square, we saw a huge sign. It was covered with lots of writing in big, bold black letters, frightening letters, and horrible words. Jews are forbidden to go swimming, to enter public parks, to sit on public benches, to own automobiles, to own bicycles, to own radios, to ride on buses, to ride on trains, to leave their homes before 6 in the morning and after 6 at night. Jews will no longer be issued ration cards. As I read the sign, a sick feeling crept into my stomach. I don't understand, Papa, I said. If the Jews aren't given ration cards anymore, how will they get food? We need our cards to buy groceries. They won't get food, Papa answered in a short, hard voice I didn't recognize as his. I couldn't make any sense of this. But then they'll starve, I cried. Exactly, Papa said in that voice that was like a slap. If the Nazis don't think of another way to kill them first. I had only seen Papa angry a few times in my life, and then it had only been a mild kind of anger, like when I accidentally broke the milk pitcher that had belonged to his mother, or when I refused to go to bed when I should. But now he was standing stock still in front of the sign. Two red spots appeared on either side of his face. His hands had tightened into fists, and his jaw was clenched so hard it was quivering. He tore the sign off the post and threw it to the ground. Then he stamped on it, his footsteps as hard and angry as his voice had been. I hoped a soldier wasn't watching. Without a word, Papa turned and walked out of the square. He walked with fast, furious strides. I hurried after him. You know why I did that, don't you, Annie? Papa asked. Of course, I said. Because the Nazis have no right to march in here and tell people what to do. Papa stopped and put a hand on my shoulder. His face was very serious. That's part of it, he said, and also because every person has the right to live in this world with his head held high. The Nazis are trying to take that away from the Jews. They're trying to make them feel less than human. I looked up at the man I admired more than anyone else in the world, and I saw that the blue eyes,
that were always so honest and clear were clouded now with pain. I covered his hand with mine. "But we won't let them do that, will we, Papa?" I said quietly. My father smiled then, a sad little smile that tugged at my heart. "No," he said, "we won't." We started walking again. "You always do or say something that amazes me, Annie." "Yes, it's like I've always said, you were made for a very special purpose," Papa praised. "More special than driving my teacher crazy?" I asked. "Or tearing Mama's best lace curtains?" Papa laughed. "Definitely more special than that," he declared. Papa frowned then, the crease between his eyebrows growing deeper. It was funny. I hadn't noticed that Papa even had any wrinkles before the Nazis came. Now they seemed to grow deeper every day. "These are the kinds of times that make everyone wonder what their purpose is," Papa said. He was very serious. "And what they're made of." The Nazis weren't through giving commands. Their next order was that all Jews had to wear a big yellow Star of David pinned to their clothes whenever they left the house. To be Jewish and caught on the street without your star meant imprisonment. It was the first morning all the Jews were supposed to have their star on, and I appeared at breakfast with a clumsy Star of David I'd made out of yellow construction paper. I had pinned it to my sweater with a safety pin. As I slid into my chair at the kitchen table, Mama and Siri stared at me. "And just what is that?" Mama asked, pointing at my very badly drawn star. "If Leia has to wear a star, then I'm going to wear one too," I declared. Siri lowered her eyes and kept right on eating her cereal. She never got involved in the arguments Mama and I had. Then Mama slapped my hand hard on the table. "Take that off immediately," she ordered. "But Mama," I pleaded, "I want to make Leia feel better. I want to show all the Jewish children in our school I'm still their friend." "And what will you be showing the Nazis?" Mama asked. "Have you thought of that?" "I don't care what the Nazis think," I shouted back with more force than I meant to use. "It's a stupid order." Mama's lips tightened. "Take off that star," she ordered. "I won't," I said flatly, glaring at Mama. I felt like a 2-year-old, like a silly infant having a temper tantrum. But I couldn't give in. This was important. Somehow, some way, I had to show the world how I felt. "Siri, look at your sister," Mama said. But Siri didn't raise her head. "She has her mule face on," Mama continued. Mama folded her arms. "Well, I can be just as stubborn as you, Annie. You will go to your room and remain there until you take off the star," she ordered. My eyes widened in surprise, and even Siri snuck an amazed peek at Mama. "You mean you want me to miss school?" I asked. "No, of course I don't. Do you know what could happen to you if the Nazis caught you parading around wearing that silly thing? They could arrest you. They could..." Mama broke off, and I saw that the anger in her eyes had suddenly become a fear so deep she couldn't even speak of it. Mama turned away. "Go to your room, Annie," she said. I stood up so angry I accidentally knocked over Siri's juice glass. Quickly, Siri grabbed her napkin and started blotting up the juice. "It's okay," she whispered. "I'll clean it up." She had a cover for me, but it just pointed out how perfect my sister was and how imperfect I was. "Of course you will," I hissed at Siri under my breath. "Anything to get in Mama's good graces." Siri didn't answer, but I saw her flush red. Mama whirled around. "I heard that," she snapped, "and let me tell you. You don't have to tell me anything. I already know what you're going to say." I spat out the words in a nasty, mocking voice. "Why can't you be more like your sister?" "Well," Mama asked, "why can't you?" "Because I can only be what I am," I shouted, "and I can only do what I believe in." I clenched one hand into a fist and pounded at the clumsy yellow construction paper star. "And that means wearing this."
Papa appeared at the door. He had his pipe in one hand and a paper sack in the other. "Apologize to your mother, Annie, for speaking to her in such a tone," Papa ordered. I looked at the floor. I was so furious at Mama, the Nazis, and Siri, and I was so ashamed to be scolded by Papa, I could feel my ears burning. "I'm sorry I shouted at you, Mama," I mumbled. "The way Annie spoke was wrong," Papa continued, "but what she said about the star was right," Papa said. He put down his pipe and pulled four bright yellow flowers from inside the sack. "I bought these from a flower seller this morning, one for each of us to wear," Papa said, and he began fastening one of the flowers to the lapel of his jacket. "It's my answer to the yellow Star of David the Jews have been ordered to wear," he explained. "It's like Annie said, we must show the Nazis we support our Jewish brothers and sisters. When I see a Jewish person today, I'm going to call out a greeting at the top of my lungs." I pulled off my star and pinned on one of the flowers. The yellow petals stood out sharply against the brown of my sweater. I felt proud. I had done something right. Papa had said so. But Mama was pressing her hands to her face. If the Nazis see Annie wearing that flower, they might let her off for being a silly child. But if they see you wearing one, you're a grown man and a leader in this town. If they hear you speaking to Jews, it could be hard for you, she said. It could, Papa said without fuss. He sat down and poured himself a cup of coffee. But it's all I know to do. We must let the Jews know we, at least, are still human beings. He paused. And so are they. I repeated Papa's words to myself. It was like he had said in the square. The Nazis were trying to make the Jews feel less than human. But we weren't going to let them do it. To my surprise, I saw Siri reach across the table for a flower. She was wearing her long hair in two braids that day, and she looked like a picture in a fairy tale book, like Snow White or Sleeping Beauty. Expertly, she twisted the flower through her hair. Papa smiled at her and nodded, and I smiled too. For once, Siri and I were standing together. As if that were the last straw, Mama picked up the remaining yellow flower, and with quick, jerky movements, she tore it up. Then she opened her hands and let the shredded petals fall to the floor. Chapter 4. The Goodbye. Jew, Jew, ugly mole, stick your face in a boiling hole. Stop singing that song. Stop it. I flew at the two Nazi soldiers like a small tornado, and I began beating at them with my fists. But the blows landed harmlessly against their heavy coats. She's a fierce one, all right, one of the soldiers said, chuckling. He grabbed my arm and held me in a hard grip. No matter how I twisted and struggled, it was no use. The other soldier began singing at Leia again. He was backing her up against the brick wall of the school. Jew, Jew, ugly mole, stick your face in a boiling hole. Stick your face in a boiling pot. By tomorrow, Jew will rot. The soldier ended the song with his face right in Leia's, and then he spit at her. He spit at my best friend. I turned beet red, yelling out, "You have no right to insult my friend like that." The soldier that was holding me yanked me toward him. "Jews are unclean, don't you know that? And greedy and mean," he said. "That's not true," I shouted. The soldier gave my arm a twist. It hurt so much that my eyes watered. "I'm warning you, little girl," the soldier growled at me. "If you want to stay out of trouble, stop hanging around with these dirty Jews." I looked down at the soldier's hand that encircled my arm. It was big and red and beefy, and without a second thought, I bit down on it. With a yelp of pain, the soldier pulled his hand away. As I sprang to freedom, the soldier yelled at me, "You little brat!" The other soldier grabbed at me, but I slid around him and took hold of Leia's hand, pulling her behind me. I was the fastest runner in my class, and I turned on the speed. We ran down one block and then another. I could hear Leia panting,
but we didn't dare slow down. I sneaked a look over my shoulder. No one seemed to be chasing us, but we still had to be careful. We dodged down one alley and then another. Then I stopped and peered around the corner of a building. The coast was clear.
"You heard what the soldier said," Leia gasped out. "We can't hang around together anymore. It's too dangerous for you."
She gave me a little shove.
"You better go home."
"The Germans don't scare me," I said, with a bravery I didn't really feel.
"It's dangerous for me, too," Leia said.
She leaned back against the building, trying to catch her breath. She was too thin, and her eyes were too large in her hollowed-out face. "If the Nazis catch a Jew disobeying them, they do all kinds of terrible things," Leia said.
"It's so hard at home," she said. "Jews are no longer allowed to work, so we have no money. And even if we did, no one is allowed to sell us anything. We can't even buy food. Once a week, Papa walks out to the countryside to beg something from the farmers. Sometimes Mama goes too and tries to trade her jewelry for food."
She paused and drew a long, shuddering breath.
"Every time they go, I'm so afraid. I'm afraid they'll be picked up and taken away," she said.
I frowned. "Taken away where?" I asked. Leia took my arm, drawing me toward her. I could feel her trembling.
"The Nazis are taking more Jews all the time, right off the streets, right out of our houses and synagogues. The Nazis say they're taking Jews to work camps to make parts for airplanes and tanks. But we've heard rumors that the camps are horrible, horrible places, that people are beaten and starved, and worse," she cried.
Her words sent chills up and down my spine.
"That's why some of my friends have gone into hiding," Leia continued.
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"I mean, they just disappear," Leia said. "Christians hide them on their farms or in their attics or cellars. Some families even have secret rooms in their houses where they're hiding Jews. It's the only chance we have not to be sent to the camps."
"Will you go into hiding, Leia?" I asked. She shrugged. "My parents said it would be too hard for our whole family to hide, since my sister's still a baby," Leia said. "But they said that maybe I could go on my own. There's a family in the country that has a hiding place just big enough for one person." She shook her head and said,
"But I don't know, Annie. I don't know if I could do it. Hide all by myself, maybe for years, in a stranger's home."
"If it's your only chance, Leia, then you have to take it," I urged.
"Maybe. I don't know," Leia said. She looked down.
"Anyway, this will be the last time we see each other, Annie. Mrs. Van Kooten told us today that Jewish children are no longer allowed to go to public school. From now on, we have to go to a Jewish school."
"I could come to your house," I said quickly, "or you can come to mine."
I stopped. "Of course we couldn't do that. We couldn't even be seen together anymore." I squeezed Leia's hand and said,
"It's only goodbye until the end of the war, Leia, and then we'll see each other again. And maybe by then we'll be old enough to go all those places we've talked about, Egypt and Africa."
Leia's thin face lit up. "And Tasmania!" Her hand clutched at mine so tightly, I could feel her nails digging into my palms.
"We'll go everywhere, Annie, just like we said we would."
"You're the smartest girl in our class, Leia," I spoke with all the firmness I could summon up. "If you have to go into hiding by yourself, you can do it."
I threw my arms around Leia. "Promise me you'll do everything you can so you won't have to go to one of those camps, so that after the war we can find each other again," I whispered.
"I promise, Annie," Leia said in a quiet voice. She unfastened the small golden Star of David she wore on a chain around her neck. She held it out to me.
"I want you to have this, so you'll always remember me," she said.
I quickly took off my tiny silver cross. I gave it to her.
"And you take this," I said. "It will remind you that we're still best friends, no matter what."
"No matter what,"
Leo echoed. We were both silent a moment. Neither one of us was sure how to say goodbye. Then suddenly Leia said, "We'll count to five, and then we'll say goodbye together, okay?" I nodded. It was a good plan. It would make the last moment easier. "Let's start," Leia said. "One," I thought of how long we'd known each other, since kindergarten. "Two," I thought of how we rode our bikes together and went ice skating and roller skating, how we did everything together. "Three," I thought of how we told each other everything, all our secrets and all our hopes and dreams for the future. "Four," I thought of how much I was going to miss her and how I would never, ever have another friend like her. "Five," we said it together, just like we'd planned. "Goodbye." I bit my lip to stop it from trembling. "See you after the war, Leia," I said. "After the war, Annie," she returned. We split apart and started running. I went one way, and Leia went another, just like the Nazis wanted. But as I ran, I remembered what Leia had said that day in the country, when I'd told her I wanted to keep the moment forever. "You can," she'd said. "Your memories are always with you." I stood in front of the bedroom door. It sounded like someone was crying, but it couldn't possibly be Siri. For once, I didn't go barging into the room my sister and I now shared. Instead, I knocked gently. "Siri?" I called. "You can come in, Annie," Siri answered. She sounded as if she were far away. She was curled up on the bed, knees drawn up to her chest. Her beautiful hair was spread around her like a silken shawl. I'd never seen Siri like this before. What could possibly have gone wrong in her perfect life? Slowly, Siri pushed up to a sitting position. When I cry, my face gets all red and splotchy, but Siri's skin was only softly flushed. Her eyes weren't puffy like mine would have been. They only gleamed more brightly. Yet in those crystal blue eyes was a look I'd never seen before. "What's wrong, Siri?" I asked softly. She stood and walked to the window. "For the past year, Annie, I've been meeting a boy in secret. His name is Aaron," she said. I couldn't even speak. I was so surprised. We both knew our mother's rules on going out with boys. It was strictly forbidden. "Oh, boys were allowed to walk Siri to and from church or choir practice, and once in a while they'd even been invited to the house for dinner. But to meet one alone? Never. We had a reputation to maintain," Mama always said, "as ministers' daughters. I met him over a year ago in the little warming house by the pond. I was skating, and so was he. We started talking and laughing," Siri said. She turned to me. Her feelings for this Aaron lit her face like a candle. "He's so nice and funny and smart," she blushed, "and handsome." "Why didn't you ask him home to meet Papa and Mama?" I asked. She lowered her head. "I know I should have, but he's Jewish, Annie," Siri said. I was afraid that Mama might not approve, that she wouldn't think it right for a minister's daughter to be seeing a Jewish boy. I wouldn't let him tell his parents about me either. Siri continued, "And now Aaron's been rounded up and taken to a work camp. I was supposed to meet him this afternoon at the same little warming house where we always went, but his sister came instead. Aaron asked her to tell me what had happened." I remembered Leia's words about the camps. I couldn't tell Siri, not now. Still looking out the window, Siri said, "I know you think I'm all prim and proper and perfect. That's what everyone thinks. But the truth is," she turned to face me, "I'm just afraid to say what I really think or feel, or do what I really want to, afraid that I'll make someone mad at me. I wish I were brave like you, Annie, but I'm not." I stared at Siri, at my slender, graceful, beautiful sister. She thought I was brave. She thought silly, messy, loud Annie was brave. If I'd been braver, maybe Aaron and I could have had a life together, no matter what anyone said, Ciri continued. And now it's too late. Ciri started crying again. I went to her, and as I had done when I was small, I began stroking her long hair. I didn't know what else to do, and I couldn't think of anything to say. I just wanted her to know that I was there for her. As we stood there, I tried to get over my surprise that Ciri thought she should be something different than what she was, just like I did. All at once, I felt closer to my sister than ever before. Rain started to splatter the window pane, the kind of heavy rain that turned the whole world gray. I could feel the rain inside me, just as I'd felt the sunshine that day in the country, and it was like heavy sadness pressing down on me from all sides. It seemed as if the whole world was weeping.